Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, Beaver Nation, and welcome to Beaver Banter, an Oregonian sports podcast. I'm Joe Freeman, senior writer at The Oregonian, and he's Nick Daschle, Beavers beat writer at The Oregonian, and we're here to talk all things Oregon State, as always. Nicholas, how's it going, man? You got basketball in the brain? Where are you at? What's going on?
Yeah, you got spring break on the brain. I got basketball on the brain. I got Albany on my brain.
Yeah, you're looking forward to making a little trip to Albany, huh? A little upstate New York action?
Ask me in a week, because I think I'm on a crop duster on one of the legs to get there.
Oh, you'll be fine. You'll be just fine. There's no problems with aviation and plane travel right now. Everything's perfectly safe.
As long as the doors stay on.
we'll get right into it today. We got a lot to talk about with the women's basketball team, of course, the Red Hot baseball team. Before we do, here's a couple quick notes. The remarkable women's basketball turnaround will continue into the Sweet 16 for the Beavers after they won first and second round NCAA tournament games at Gill Coliseum. The third seed Oregon State will face the number two seed Notre Dame on Friday. The Irish just won shortly before we started recording, actually. It's Monday afternoon, by the way, so keep that in your heads for as far as timing-wise here. But, so the Beavers will face the Irish. It's the fifth time in school history the Beavers have reached the Sweet 16 and first since 2019. Conversely, two men's basketball players have entered the transfer portal. Junior guard Christian Wright and sophomore guard Justin Rochelin have both put their names in there and will be looking for other opportunities elsewhere. I think it will be their third transfer for both players as they look for their next move. And then final note here, Travis Bazana was named the Pac-12 Player of the Week for the third time this season on Monday. He's the first OSU player to win the award three times in one season. It's also the fourth time in his career he's earned the Player of the Week honor, and that is also the most in school history. So junior second baseman hit 500 with six homers, 13 RBIs, and 11 runs scored. And most insanely, he hit a leadoff homer in all four games last week, which is believed to be the first time in school history that has happened. Beavers went 4-0 last week, and we'll get into that and more about the baseball team here in a little bit. But first, got to talk women's hoops. I don't know where to begin here, Nick. I think both of us kind of didn't, I wouldn't say we assumed they would be here, but we thought they had a good chance to get out of those first two rounds and to get out of Gill and move on to Albany, and kind of a taking care of business two games. But I guess what did you like most out of their first two wins in the NCAA tournament?
Well, I think we got to see how just we've been talking about how versatile this team is all year long, and we got to see, you know, what that means, because especially against Nebraska, because I mean they had a two quarter stretch there. Well, let's say like 16 minutes where, I mean, that nothing went right at the offensive end. And it's not like they didn't get good shots. It was just basketball. They just couldn't hit a thing. They had good open shots, just couldn't hit them. And I mean, they went, I want to say, what did they have, 19? They had 16 points between in the second and third quarter combined. I mean, it was brutal.
Last time I checked, that's not good.
No, but on the other hand, Nebraska hardly made up any ground because they were having trouble scoring, because that's where the versatility came with Oregon State, because they weren't scoring. I mean, they just picked it up on the defensive end, and Nebraska had a hard time scoring. Mm-hmm. Oregon State had, I think they had a 13-point lead with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. They went like, it was 9 minutes, nine consecutive minutes, didn't score. They still had a 6-point lead at the end of the third quarter. So the fact that they didn't do anything offensively and still held on to a pretty good size of their lead said something. And then once the shots started falling, it was over. But you know, that was one of the things, you know, we saw. We saw the depth of this team, how Lily Hansford, shook off a shooting slump and kind of got the offense going again yesterday. We saw Dom Parova, the Czech Republic freshman, mm-hmm. who just keeps coming off the bench and making plays. You know, we saw Tamia Gardner, who I don't know that anybody would say she's the MVP of this team, but she's close. I mean, the things that she's contributing right now with her rebounding, her defense has just come a million miles since the start of the year. She was an okay defender early in the year, but now she's probably as good as they have right now. I mean, she was blocking shots, really covering down low when Reagan Beers had all the foul trouble yesterday. Yeah, their starters were solid yesterday. I mean, it was a solid performance outside of those 16 minutes where they just couldn't score. I mean, I thought it was going to be a rout yesterday. It probably would have been under normal circumstances. It just, the shots didn't fall. But I mean, this team looks like it's ready to at least make a showing back in Albany when they play Notre Dame on Friday.
Yeah, when you can attack people with different, from different angles, and all angles is even better, and you're a two-way threat with your defense, it really poses a lot of trouble. I mean, I think we've talked a lot about the impact Reagan Beers has and how important she is to this team, but I mean, in that Nebraska game, she battled foul trouble. You know, that was one of the problems there too with the offense. And so, when you can win with your defense in a game like that against a team like that, that really bodes well moving forward. And speaking of that defense, I think Nebraska was 4 for 20 from 3-point range. They shot 31% from the field. You were there, so you know how many of those looks were open and just missed and how many of those were contested. But regardless, you have to like, in particular, what you saw out of that defense as it moves forward into the tournament, because if you're not making shots, if you are making shots, either way, if you're playing defense, you got a chance in pretty much any game.
Yeah, I mean, at times yesterday, Nebraska was just absolutely confused. They'd get the shot clock and get down to 5, and they'd just be looking around, looking for somebody to do anything to get a shot up at times, especially in the first half. And really, I mean, they were 4 for 20, but they were 1 for 16. They made 3 of their last 4 to get to 4 of 20. And, mm-hmm. and by the time they started making them, Oregon State already had like a 16 or 17 point lead. And so it really was just sort of desperation stuff at that point. But, I tried to ask the Nebraska coach, and I knew where this was going to go, but I tried to get her to compare Oregon State a little bit to the best teams in the Big Ten, which would include Iowa. And yeah, she didn't really want to go there too much. She just wanted to say how good Oregon State plays when it's on its home floor. And, they're always going to back up their conference, team. So yeah, I was hoping to get something out of her, but I kind of think Oregon State does compare somewhat to Iowa. I mean, outside of Caitlin Clark, obviously she's the best player, would be the best player on the floor, but I'm not sure Oregon State wouldn't have the next 2 or 3 best players if that was ever a matchup. So
yeah, you from my end, Nick, you've kind of cut out a couple of times with the audio. I hope that our audio, I hope for you listeners that it's not affecting you, but you have cut out about 3 or 4 times on my end. So I guess fingers crossed on that. Everything seems fine from the from the podcast tool, but for whatever reason, you've kind of gone out a few times there. I guess looking ahead to Notre Dame, haven't had a lot of time to dig into them, but I guess how would you evaluate that matchup? And at this point, we're on neutral site, so it's kind of Ian Steven from that standpoint.
Yeah, I haven't spent a lot of time looking at Notre Dame other than, I know they have, Hannah Hidalgo, who's the, once Caitlin Clark leaves next year, she'll be, she'll be one of the two or three best players in the country next year. I think Notre Dame has a couple of injuries that haven't come up lately, but I think they might have some trouble covering Reagan Beers inside, although with 4 days to prepare, I would assume Notre Dame would have a good plan to cover her. I just think Notre Dame, Notre Dame looks like, a solid team, but I don't know that they look any, a whole lot better or whatnot than Oregon State. It looks like a pretty solid match. It is one of those games where Oregon State's going to have to play out of its mind and hope Notre Dame doesn't show up to have a chance. I would guess if there's a point spread in this game, it's probably somewhere within 3 points of each other. It's that close of a game. It's the next game that is the one that everyone would go, now that's the one you've got to play, everybody's got to show up with their A game, and South Carolina might not they'll probably have to back up a little bit for you to win that game. Although, if you get there, who knows? I mean, those sorts of things, that's why they play these tournaments. Even the heavy favorites sometimes just don't show up at times, and you get them in the fourth quarter, and who knows? But that's what Oregon State's facing in this regional is, South Carolina's first got to play the winner of the Indiana Oklahoma play later today, and they'll pull the winner of that play South Carolina in the other regional semifinal in Albany. So, and then the winners of those will play on Sunday. So, and not trying to get too far ahead here, but that's
no, you've already gone ahead. We're moving past Notre Dame. You've called your shot.
I certainly wouldn't predict Oregon State to win this regional, but I think they're equipped to have a shot. They at least have a shot with this, against the teams that are back there. And I mean, one of the things I was going to bring up was, you look at Oregon State on paper, you can make a case that they're a year away. They have no seniors. They have a lot of freshmen and sophomores. You could say they're a year away. But in today's era of the transfer portal, you can't think like that. If you got a good team, you got to strike. You can't, redshirt players that are, young, freshmen. If they appear to be ready to play, you got to go with them these days, because you never know who's leaving or coming, the following year. So, this Oregon State team may be a year away, but they got to play this year like it's their year now.
Yeah, you cut out a couple of times there again, Nick. I'm worried about our audio here, but we're gonna press forward. One thing I did want to ask about was obviously there was a little bit of a late game or late third quarter concern with Reagan Beers in the opener, and then she rolled her ankle obviously, and then she came back to play in game two. Did she seem hobbled? Did she seem healthy? Did she seem fine? What was your perspective on her and that injury?
Yeah, she was fine. I think she just rolled it more than anything else, and it kind of scared her a little bit. But she was fine. I mean, you kind of tell that even on Friday when she walked back to the bench, and she didn't have any. She was wearing sandals, after the game on Friday, and so there was no, big ice pack or anything like that on her leg or ankle. So. Yeah, it was a non story really. She's good to go.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to add or focus on here before we shift to baseball?
No, but I was going to say about baseball. I mean, I can't remember. You've been covering this is your third year doing Oregon State baseball? I can't remember.
Fifth year.
Fifth year. 50. Wow. God, you're old. I can't imagine there's been a weekend where Oregon State has just thoroughly dominated a Pac-10. I mean, Washington's not terrible. I mean, they're a decent Pac-12 team. They just took them completely out of it.
Yeah, there's been a couple series in recent. They absolutely obliterated Arizona State a couple years ago. I think they won like 21-1 in the opener or something like that. Yeah, funny note about that one is the Sun Devils were staying at my hotel in Corvallis, and the next morning, Willie Bloomquist, former major leaguer, longtime Mariner, he's the coach at Arizona State, and he got tossed in that first game when the Beavers just crushed them, and he was in my we rode the elevator down the next morning, and you could tell he was still just stewing over the game. But it was very lopsided. On the one hand, Washington's offense is absolutely horrible. They are, I think, going into the series, Travis Bazana had hit one fewer home run than Washington had as a team, and Oregon State had scored more runs in their previous eight games than Washington had scored all season. So from that standpoint, it was never going to be a contest. But Washington did have the best ERA in the Pac-12 heading into that game, and they were coming off a series win at 14th-ranked Texas. So notable win, playing their best baseball of the season, good pitching, still no contest. I'm spacing on exactly what the numbers were, but they outscored them, I want to say, 31-3 in the series. And if you kind of look back at the midweek win over Portland, which was 14-3, they outscored their four games, their four opponents last week, 45-6, which, you know, speaks to the depth and offensive capabilities of this team.
You always wonder how a team's gonna bounce back from a game like Utah where you have that big lead and blow it. You know, if there'll be any hangover. I mean, they pretty much put that to rest.
Yeah, they put that to rest and then some. I don't think the Pac-12 is very good this year, first of all. So I don't think this is going to be the last weekend we kind of see something like this, combination of just how good this team is and how the Pac-12 is a little bit down this year. Again, I think I wouldn't say this is the norm, but I think there's going to be some weekends that kind of resemble this a little bit. But, you know, just beyond the sheer offense, and we've talked in depth about how many guys this team is missing. And, you know, you brought it up last week and I poo-pooed it, but it turns out that Trent Carraway did hurt himself in that game against Utah on Saturday, 2 weeks ago. He broke his finger on his throwing hand trying to bunt in his third at-bat of that game, and he's going to be sidelined, you know, probably 4 to 6, 4 to 8 weeks with that. So, you know, they're missing him, who's a potential freshman All-American, and they're missing Brady Casper, who's played sparingly this year. Those are two middle-of-the-order bats for them, and they're still the best offense in the Pac-12 and one of the best offenses in the country. In fact, I added up some of these numbers. When you look at the team, Beavers ranked ninth in batting average, 15th in home runs, fifth in on-base percentage, fifth in slugging percentage, and they're averaging 9.9 runs a game. And those are national ranks. They lead the Pac-12 and all that. So, you know, it's kind of just what we thought heading into the season is coming to fruition, just maybe even more emphatically and then even more depth, because I think most teams that lose two middle-of-the-order guys and a handful of other guys, including your Friday night starter for three starts, most teams that would face those obstacles would not be in this position. So really, really been impressed with the depth of this team. One kind of note from last weekend that, you know, maybe was kind of a footnote at this point, but it might have been the biggest development on the team in a while, and that's the return of Aiden May. The Beavers' Friday night starter had missed the previous three starts, and there was all these rumors all over the place, people tweeting at me about, are there rumors he's getting shut down for the year? I don't know where these rumors are located beyond people's brains, but he returned through a very nice almost three innings. He was on a very strict pitch count He was going to be held to 45, and he only threw 41. So, you know, kind of breezed through the lineup. He gave up a couple a leadoff doinker single up the middle. It was kind of a soft liner, and then kind of gave up opposite field doubles, one on a two strike count, but only gave up three hits in the game, and I want to say he struck out five in a solid almost three innings. So very nice bounce back performance from him too, which, you know, is huge for this team to stack, like we've talked about in the past, to stack their rotation.
Well, I would say in defense of not really defending Beaver fans, but I mean, I would say, there's been a number of pitchers, seems like over the last 4 or 5 years, that, you know, they leave the game and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you find out they're out for the year with a Tommy John or something. It's like, so I can't blame fans thinking, you know, here's Aiden May, you know, arm injury. Oh, geez, here we go. But that's good news. The other thing I was looking at here, I mean, these guys might have this. I mean, we can speculate all we want because we're not fans. We're just journalists. You know, we're not rooting for anybody. I mean, they might have this conference wrapped up and with 2 or 3 weeks left to go, the way this thing is coming together. I mean, shoot, you look at the teams that are up. There's already everybody but Oregon's already got 4 conference losses. Mm-hmm. Oregon's got 3. I mean, I don't know when they play Oregon. It's not till later in the year, isn't it? If I remember right.
Yeah, I want to say it's in May, but I couldn't say off the top of my head.
But I mean, they might have such a huge lead going into May that, I don't know how early somebody, what the earliest anyone's ever clinched the regular season championship. But I mean, these guys might just contest that.
And you know, they move along to USC this weekend, and USC has struggled. They're 4-5 in conference and 8-15 overall. It would not be all that surprising if we looked back at that Utah series and Utah might finish in the top 2, 3, 4 in the conference. I think they're better. You hear Utah and kind of, you know, roll your eyes, but I think they're probably deeper and better than you know, we perhaps gave them credit for. But, you know, it's to that point, it's just like I said a while ago, the Pac-12 is down this year. There's no other team besides Oregon State that's ranked in the Pac-12. And it's not even close. Oregon's kind of the next, you know, they're second in the conference right now. And they just had a nice series against Arizona, which is, you know, they're kind of middling right now. So Oregon had to replace a ton of guys from its Pac-12 championship team last year. But they're a threat, obviously. By the way, that series is the last weekend in April to follow back up on that.
So is there any chance this might be a one bid league?
No, I would be very surprised at that. I don't know that that's ever happened.
I don't remember the year, but I want to say there was a year the Utah won the league. I don't remember the year. Utah won the league. I think Oregon State was second. No, Oregon State did not go. Utah was not good, but they just somehow lucked their way into winning the league. And I want to say Utah was the only team that went. Now, I can't remember how many years ago that. Well, it had to have been sometime between 2011 and now, but it was a while ago. But
wait, I would be livid if I was an Oregon State fan. But I mean, obviously, we haven't even talked about, you know, the biggest story of the week, which I guess we talked about his player of the week honor, but Travis Bezzana is just. Continued his kind of ridiculous play. He hitting a leadoff home run in 4 straight games. I've never. Brady Anderson did that once, I think, in '96 in the major leagues. He's the only player to ever do that at that level. I who knows if it's ever happened in college. It's believed to be the first time at Oregon State, and he's hit a home run in 5 straight games overall. So he is just, I mean, again, just ridiculous right now. He ranks, you know, in the top X amount of things offensively in the nation. Let me run that down real quick. He's fifth in the nation in batting average, .467. He's tied for third in home runs with 14, tied for 15th in RBIs with 36. Bear in mind, this is their leadoff hitter. He's tied for fifth in runs with 39, and he's third in slugging percentage and on-base percentage. He's also tied for fifth in hits. So, you know, you have an Adley Rutschman go through the program just a few years ago, number one overall pick, obviously, with one of the best individual seasons ever. And you kind of think, well, that's never going to be duplicated. It might be one upped this year. Travis is on pace to break multiple, career offensive records, depending upon how things close here. It's just really been impressive to kind of watch what he's been able to do. He's just kind of at another level right now.
Yeah. I was kind of laughing at one point where you said you don't think it's ever been done in school history, and I was thinking, has there even been done in any college? That's just stunning that I can't imagine it's been done. I don't know.
It's not just hitting a home run in that many games. He's done that in five in a row, but a leadoff home run, you know, in your first at bat, it's just the sheer odds are against it. So, I don't know. He has six home runs during his last four games. And like I said, he's got, I want to say he's got eight over the last five games. He's got three multi-homer games over the last five. So, I wrote something heading into the year, kind of looking at the offense and then looking at the pitching. And one of the things I wrote was, you know, Travis Bezzana is special and you should enjoy it while it lasts. Make a trip to Goss to go get to watch this guy in person. And I feel like that kind of is coming true. He's gonna put on a show. And it's, you know, he's just getting better, which seems ridiculous, but so really impressive by him. And you know, the offense scoring 45 runs last week, it's not just him. It's up and down the lineup. Gavin Turley kind of broke out of his, he wasn't in a slump, but he was in a home run drought. He hadn't had one since February 24th. And then he hit a grand slam in game one. And then he hit a solo shot in game, or maybe it was game two. He hit a grand slam in game two during the Beavers 10 run first inning. And then he hit a solo shot in game three. So he might be rediscovering his power swing a little bit there. And, you know, guys up and down the roster, it's a no brainer that, you know, everything Ryan Gibson, the hitting coach, said before the year is coming to fruition. I think it's safe to say this team's going to break last year's franchise record in home runs and then some with what it's going to be able to do this year. The polls came out today. Beavers still number two in three of the five, and they're number three in the other two. So still solidly at number two. Arkansas is number one. And remember, Arkansas beat Oregon State by one run in that game in Arlington earlier in the year.
By the way, I circled back to that, what I was talking about earlier about Utah, and I found that it was 2016. Utah won the Pac-12 with a 19-11 record, and their overall record was 26-29.
Wow, that's brutal. Yeah, it looks like Oregon State was 35-19 that year.
Four teams made it to the NCAAs that year. Oregon State was of the top five teams. Oregon State was among the top five. But they were the one team that didn't go to the NCAAs that year. And then you know what happened after that, 17, 18, they were just dominant from there. But yeah. I recall that one year about, that really kind of teed off Oregon State that they didn't get the NCAAs, and that sort of fueled that run there right before that. So,
yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah, it says they were tied. My program says they were tied for third that year in the Pac-12, 16-14. Definitely not a very good Pac-12 record, but you would think a 30, almost a 40-win Oregon State team would be good enough to at least get you a four seed in the postseason.
Arizona got to the College World Series that year too, and they still couldn't win the conference against a team with a losing overall record.
Boy, that's wild. That's wild. Well, should we wrap it up there? Do we want to keep talking baseball? What do you think?
Oh yeah. Oh, I was going to mention the transfer portal with Oregon.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Oregon State men. Two guys got in the portal today. Justin Rochlin and Christian Wright, both guards. Wright, he was a transfer from Georgia 2 years ago, played here. He's got 1 year of eligibility left. Justin Rochlin is a sophomore. He transferred from Arizona State 2 years ago. He redshirted down there, so they both played at Oregon State 2 years. My suspicion is they had exit interviews with the coaches, and it was probably said, you know, we're not really high on guys that shoot 22% from three and 20, you know, they just, I mean, the shooting percentages from these two guys, they're just not Division I quality type shooters. So that's my hunch is they were probably told, you know, if you want to stay here, it's probably going to be end of the bench fills for you. So, no surprise with those guys. The one guy that, you know, people obviously have their eye on is Jordan Pope. You know, we're now in the second week with the portal window open, and Pope hasn't said anything. And so people are, I've had a couple people reach out to me and go, hey, that's kind of a win, isn't it? And I said, well, I mean, I don't read anything into it. I think what Jordan Pope is, he likes Oregon State. But I mean, if somebody comes to him, one of his family members or somebody, and they make a backdoor offer that he just can't refuse, I mean, he's got 45. That could happen anytime in this 45-day window. I mean, like I said, I know he loves Oregon State, but it's, you know, if somebody offers him something that he can't turn down, that would be an issue. But I guess it's a positive. He hasn't gone in the portal yet, so. There's that. And Tyler Bilodeau, he hasn't either. I've heard same thing with him. I heard he really loves Oregon State. So, I mean, it's sort of good news to this point, but I'm sure there's going to be some nervous moments until we get till, you know, the end of April with the portal window being open.
Yeah. It's not bad news yet.
No. And you know, if they hang on to those two guys and they can add a few pieces, you know, this team will be competitive in the WCC for the top end of the league. If they can't hang on to those guys, then I don't know what it's going to look like. I have no idea.
Yeah, well, unfortunately for fans, this is the era we live in. So you have to, you have to stay abreast of this stuff at this point. You know, right. The good news is you can always sign transfers too. So
right,
but. Okay. Well, hopefully, I apologize if the audio was spotty in the first half of the podcast. Not really. It's kind of out of our control, but hopefully that was just on my end that I couldn't hear Nick and you guys could. If so, disregard what I just said. If not, then I apologize for that. And enjoy the baseball run. Enjoy the what's left of the NCAA tournament for your Oregon State women. Notre Dame on the 29th, Friday. Which is what, third Friday?
Friday in Albany, New York.
There you go. And send Nick all your Albany, New York food racks because he wants to know where to go get some dinner. And sounds like he's a big Albany fan. So until then,
thanks. I've been there, so I know. I already know it.
Oh, there you go. You got your coffee spots and everything, I bet.
Yeah.
Thanks as always for listening, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.